You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org. Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio, another year of Outdoor News Radio. Happy New Year, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in this weekend, first weekend of 2026. I hope the holiday, the New Year's holiday, was great for everybody. Taking advantage of the phenomenal winter conditions we've got out there with snow and ice. Guests this week will include Mark Holston from MinFish. We'll talk about that organization's plans for the new year, especially the legislative session that will kick in not until February this year. We'll also have Tim Lesmeister, as usual, and we're going to talk a little bit about the All-Canada shows. Dan Small is going to jump in with a segment, preview that for listeners. But my first guest normally is Tim Spielman, but this week we're kicking off with somebody new who's been with us before, but never as a lead-in guest. Put some pressure on him is our friend Joel Nelson. Joel is the head of marketing for Onyx Fish. He's also been a longtime contributor here at Outdoor News. And Joel, good to see you. I hope the holiday season treated you well. You're fighting off a cold, however, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's kind of inevitable. We go out hunting and fishing and doing all the fun things. You might catch a cold afterwards.
Sometimes your resistance is down if you're pushing really hard. Yeah, I saw my son go through that also here in mid-December. But I'm glad you're with us. You hail from kind of the Southeast metro area.
Yep.
So you and I like to bond over the river now and then. We've got fishable ice on some of the backwaters, and we have for several weeks, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a great ice season. The way things started out, you couldn't have scripted it any better that rush of cold air came in and really froze up a lot of things statewide. So we've been enjoying ice fishing now for weeks. It's been great.
Yeah, it really was. Well, that's something we were reporting in early to mid-December was that it was good ice from north to south. You and I were talking a little bit off here. You got to be so careful on the backwaters anywhere on the Mississippi River. Although I tell you, back in my day, I remember fishing thick ice all over the Mississippi River when you get a good cold winter like this one. But anytime you're fishing over moving water, you got to be extra careful. Tell us about your protocol there a little bit.
You know, I'm a panfish hound, but I also love to chase walleyes. And lucky for me, and in the backwaters, there's good fishing for both. And panfish, they tend to prefer areas with a little bit less flow. You still got to pick your way out. I mean, a pick or a chisel is just step number one. And you got to know how many strikes it takes to break through so many inches of ice. For me, two strong strikes, if it breaks through, it's not safe for me to walk on. So if I've got three or four or more, I'm good to go. But the key is to keep picking out. And then speaking of picks, always have ice picks around your neck. I wear a float suit. Like, there's just a couple of different pieces of precaution that you can use. And once you move on to walleyes who like a little bit of current, well, that's when you need to be extra careful, because you're just flirting with disaster if you go in unprepared, unready. Throw rope's another thing. Always go with a buddy. Those are a couple key tips that have kept me safe over the years.
Yeah, excellent tips. Let's face it, you get into the heart of winter in our lake region, and we know when there's sometimes multiple feet of ice, we're not checking as much, right? That's a different animal on the Mississippi River, where you've got current and ice conditions can change because of current can change even in the dead of winter. So you always need to be checking ice conditions down there in the Mississippi backwaters.
100%. Other thing to look for is sometimes discolored ice. It looks different. Right. The snow is melted versus snow piling up. There's a number of things to look for. The more you do it, the better you get at it. But again, going in eyes wide open, prepared is the only way to go.
It's always fun to talk about river fishing a little bit, since I'm an old river rat myself, and there's an old saying that you never know what you're going to catch in a river, especially the Mississippi. Are there any quirky things that you tend to bump into during winter ice fishing down on the Mississippi, or is it pretty standard pike, walleyes, and panfish?
You know, it can be a little bit of everything, and that's when it's the most fun. I love it when I get into an accidental school of white bass. Man, do those things bite ice. We've got forward-facing sonar. A lot of us, we can look around and see all that we've been missing. I had a gar take a swipe at my bait here a week or two ago. And I'm almost glad I didn't hook up because it looked really big. And while it would have been fun to fight, I don't think I would have landed that thing. So quillback, moon eye, all kinds of crazy things show up. Yeah. And just that wonderment of what's going to come through the hole next, like you pointed out, makes it a fun fish no matter when you go.
Catfish tend to be fairly dormant this time of year, right? So that's, you know, even the catfish we associate with Mississippi River fishing, not a lot going on with them this time of year. The yellow perch have been phenomenal on the river. I wrote a story about that a year or two ago. The resurgence of yellow perch on the Mississippi, there's some nice jumbos down there.
It's really unbelievable. I kind of started catching on to that probably 2 years ago, maybe three, where I was actually at an event down on the southern stretches of Pool 8. And down there, they were on fire. And then I started talking to some guys up and down the river like you were, Winona, Wabasha, all the way up to Pool 4, the south end of Pool 4. It's just, it's come alive. And the perch, they're eating machines. So when you can find them in those shallow backwater areas, they tend to play ball. And I haven't hit them yet this year, but I'm looking forward to it because, man, it's just so much fun. And perch eat great. Like, it's just a wonderful species.
Outdoor News Radio here for a segment of this week's broadcast. Happy New Year, everybody. Our friend Joel Nelson from Onyx is with us. He is the marketing manager for Onyx Fish. He's also been a longtime contributor at Outdoor News. Do you fish any of the other rivers during the winter, or is that, you know, you're not that far from, you know, the Cannon River and some of those other southeast?
For sure. You know, it's interesting. We fish the rivers a ton during the summertime, especially come August. That water gets skinny. There's less places for them to be. But from an ice fishing perspective, or even just like a winter open water angling effort, if I'm going to go out in the winter on some of these other rivers, I'll tend to go to the main channel of the Mississippi. And maybe you get a February thaw, a March thaw. And boy, is it fun to put the short rods away for just a little bit, right? Like, we're early now. I'm still loving fishing. But it feels really great to stretch the line on a 6-7 foot rod when you haven't done it.
Have you gotten up into lake country much this winter so far, Joel? What do you make of what's cooking out there? Any tips? You know, we can be talking mid-season tactics already. I mean, the past 2 years, early January was still early ice, but we've had, you know, 3-4 weeks of pretty good ice fishing already. I think we can start talking about some mid-season tactics. What's your plan?
For sure. Like you said, this is one of those years where you can start pushing away from the shore a little earlier than you used to. You know, fall, those same places you do fall trolling, full moon trolling runs up in the 6-7 foot shallows. That's where you find them early season, but it's not early season anymore. So I tend to look for first major piece of structure just off of the shoreline areas, any humps, rock piles, neck down areas between two pieces of structure that come off of a main lake point. That's been really magical because those main lake points will stack up in the fall and early ice. Those fish just kind of progress out from there. And a lot of them are chasing schools of either spot-tailed shiners, yellow perch. Some of them are chasing open water tulipy in the systems that have them. And you'll see those fish ride a little higher in the water column. But yeah, my number one goal as we go into this middle period is to get away from the crowds, stay away from people, still fish safe ice, which is really attainable right now, and make sure that you kind of got these spots to yourself, because traffic, especially truck traffic, I've seen it so many times on underwater camera. I'm working a walleye, a crappie, and a truck drives by even a quarter mile away and really rumbles that ice. They turn inside out to swim away. Darn. It's unreal, the response. So you imagine overhead traffic just rolling over them all the time. It's not something they tolerate for very long.
A couple of weeks ago, I had Tony Roach on, and I asked him if there was one lure, one technique he could use for the early season, what would it be? I'll pitch the same question to you. And we're talking walleyes here. As we get into you know, really the heart of the ice season, the mid-season, is there a one tactic? If you could only choose one, what would it be?
For walleyes, an 1/8 ounce buckshot rattle spoon You could have asked me 10 years ago, I would have said that. 20 years ago, I might have said that too. It's been around forever. In systems that are clear, a rattle when you pound it when they're not on screen works to bring them in from afar. And then you just got to be a little more subtle in clear systems. In dirty water systems that I fish a lot down in southern Minnesota, or even portions of the river backwaters and north, you could just keep pounding that thing all day and rattle away. You tip it with a minnow head and fish it pretty aggressively, especially this time of year. We're not to the midwinter doldrums. And it's a way to catch everything in that 8-ounce size. It's a dynamite perch. It's great for walleyes. The Bemidji guys and some of these places that have really giant crappies that swim, they'll use them for big crappies.
Oh, and for slabs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really this universal bait that I have a rod just dedicated for this to be tied on at all times. And if I'm fishing any of those species, it's always a winner.
Joel, thanks so much for spending time with us. Before we go, let's talk about Onyx. You guys keep expanding expansion plans for 2026?
Yeah, definitely. We're looking to build out the rest of the Midwest states. We currently have 10 states. Montana is soon on the way. Your listeners
awesome.
Hear that first, which is very cool. And then we're going to fill out the rest of the Midwest, like I mentioned, but we're also going to spend some time adding new features, some really cool stuff in the works, on the way. Things that'll, get people in there for more than just finding new lakes, but maybe helping them to find fish on the same lakes they're already fishing. So really trying to be a one-stop shop that gives everybody the kind of access they need to find public water accesses, understand neat new ways to access different systems, and ultimately understand the type of species, the size, and the number of those species that are in any body of water you'd want to fish.
It's been great watching you guys expand and your success, and looking forward to continue seeing that unfold this year and beyond. Joel, thanks a lot for joining us. I encourage folks to check out Onyx and check out what you've got cooking in Outdoor News.
Yeah, thanks so much, Rob. It's been great.
All right. Have a great Happy New Year to you and your family, Joel.
Thanks so much.
All right. That was Joel Nelson from Onyx, contributor to Outdoor News. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Since 1937, Ducks Unlimited has been dedicated to conserving waterfowl habitat, from breeding grounds and migration routes to southern wintering areas. Thanks to the efforts of our volunteers and supporters, we've conserved millions of acres. However, our work is far from over. You can be part of our next million-acre year. Visit ducks.org/volunteer to join the team making a real difference. Ducks Unlimited, conservation for a continent.
By the numbers, here are the costs of not having Onyx fish. 400 extra holes drilled, 100 wasted ice miles, 20 needless gallons of truck, snowmobile, or ATV gas, 5 trips trying to catch a walleye where they don't live, 3 days of vacation you'll never get back, 2 wrong turns that cost you an extra hour at prime time, and one last time you'll waste dollars and effort. Onyx fish, $34.99 per year, 10 Midwest states, countless ways to catch more fish.
Retirement can be scary, but only if you're not prepared. That's why AARP created thisisretirement.org. Because unless you've already retired, you're in pretirement and you still have time to plan. Learn about retirement savings options, potential tax breaks, and how you can build savings over time. Visit thisisretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan and feel the retirement fear disappear. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Attention hunters, have you bagged an impressive whitetail buck this season? Then show it off at the Outdoor News Best Buck Contest, sponsored by Federal. The contest runs through January 2026. Bow, rifle, or muzzleloader, all hunters are welcome. Visit OutdoorNews.com for a shot at great prizes and bragging rights. Click the Best Buck Contest link atop the page at OutdoorNews.com to learn more, enter, and view official rules. That's OutdoorNews.com.
Smokey the Bear.
Then you know why Smokey tells you when he sees you passing through. Remember, please be careful, it's the least that you can do.
After 80 years of learning his wildfire prevention tips, Smokey Bear lives within us all. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. And remember,
only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Ice season is here, and when you pull your favorite fish up through the ice, make sure you finish it right.
Chef Robert's Gourmet Breading Mix was created by a chef over 40 years ago who just wanted a better fish fry. Today, it's the same great flavor in a resealable 12-ounce bag, perfect for your kitchen or the hot stove out on the ice. Three flavors, original lemon, pepper, and Cajun. Just wet the fish, coat it, and cook it. That's it. One step from hole to plate. Chef Robert's, when you catch your favorite fish, use your favorite breading. Visit www.chefroberts.com for more information.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeseline with you for another segment. Hope you like the chatter here. If so, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191 if you would like to subscribe to our print or digital versions. Hey, we are into the new year already. Hard to believe. And that means the legislative session is coming up. It's actually a ways out. It could start a little later this year. We also have the DNR roundtable next Friday already. And I thought it'd be a good chance to check in with our friends at MinFish. Mark Holston is the executive director there. He's done a bang up job the past several years in that role. He's a former DNR commissioner and he joins us now. Mark, thank you. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Rob.
Mark, give everybody a 30,000 foot explanation of what MinFish is all about again.
You know, MinFish is, as you know, a group of anglers came together to form a nonprofit group wanting to bring a voice of anglers to the decision makers and the leaders at the state government. So we work closely with the Department of Natural Resources, Fisheries, the Commissioner's Office, the Governor's Office, and legislators. And we're up there talking to them about things that are important to anglers or should be important to anglers and make sure that those policies and investments are made so that our license fee dollars are spent the way we think they ought to be spent and investments into fishing infrastructure takes place.
Well, you've done a great job and you've moved the needle on some things, right? We had a great session a couple years ago. We got some money for hatcheries. We got some money for boat accesses. That was definitely something for the organization to hang its hat on.
Well, we did that. And then we got the funding for the invasive carp barrier on the Mississippi River.
Right.
That was another hallmark piece that we were able to get through. And now we're moving the needle, gaining traction on a variety of other issues that are important to I think all of us as anglers, particularly if you are on a stocked lake or stocking is important to your area. We're moving the needle on the St. Paul hatchery. That's been a priority for us for the last couple of years.
Let's drill into that a little bit. So the St. Paul hatchery, bottom line, what is the thing, like 120 years old or something like that?
It is the original hatchery in the state of Minnesota. It was up and operational in the late 1800s. And it's an old building. It's not the original one from 122 years ago, but it is a relic of state buildings out there. And the hatchery sits in the basement of this old building.
Okay, and it needs tuning up. Where do the fish from that hatchery, where do they go? Are they walleyes? To make it practical for listeners?
Right now, that hatchery is predominantly walleye, but it also does muskies. It also crossbreeds muskies for the tiger muskie program, which is important in the metro area. It services largely the metropolitan area, the larger metropolitan area. It's not just the seven, but it's the bigger area. But fish also, walleyes will also, and muskies, be moved out to other areas of the state that need it if stocking is low or if the numbers are low in those certain areas. So you need to think about the hatchery system more of as a system. Fish do move around or the eggs do move around.
What kind of money are we talking about to potentially restore this? Do you know off the top of your head, Mark? And it's my understanding what representatives from the executive branch and the legislature have gone and toured the facility. So we're getting the message to them that this facility needs some improvements.
One of the issues we ran into right away was, what is it we want? And so as MinFish, our vision is to replace that hatchery, that it meets the needs and future needs, meaning it has a greater capacity of stocking than it currently does, that it be open to the public for educational opportunities, whether it be school children or the general public. Sure. But then also we think a research component should exist around that. So when we started talking about those things, the thing that we ran into right away was costs. And we didn't have an engineering study. That's what's going on right now. And likely that's going to be, if the legislature does give some money, that's what it will be for. It will be for that preliminary research design acquisition if it's needed. But that's a pretty good area, good water. which are key elements to a hatchery. But space is their big part.
You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. Rob DeRieslein chatting with Mark Holston. He is the executive director of MinFish, a very important nonprofit here in the state that's advocating for anglers at the state capitol. So the legislative session kicks off on February 17th, a lot later than last year. The St. Paul hatchery potentially is going to be a priority for MinFish. What are some other big topics that you folks are going to be lobbying for on behalf of anglers over there?
Well, the other one is we're always going to be up there talking about public water accesses. We did get a lot of money 2 years ago for public water accesses and refurbishing of those, but and they're still processing through some of those dollars. But we have 3,400 public water accesses out there, and the shelf life, operational life of a hatchery is only 20, or I'm sorry, of a public water access is only 20 years old. There's 20 years.
That's amazing.
So we're way behind on our maintenance of those public accesses. So that's always going to be on the top of our list, making sure we get additional resources to the public water access program to get those rebuilt.
AIS, aquatic invasive species, getting a lot of coverage. It seems like lately we're seeing chemical applications become more controversial, I would dare say, on places like Lake Minnetonka. We're always fighting AIS invading new water bodies around the state. It's probably something we're going to talk about at the DNR roundtable this coming Friday. It's a priority with MinFish too, right?
Yeah, it was brought to our attention. Johnny Range from the West Tonka Walleye Group out on Lake Minnetonka, and we started diving in and taking a look at and realized that program, you have two programs, the Invasive Aquatic Plant Management Program run by the Ecological Waters Division, and then you have aquatic plant management permits run by fisheries. One is invasives. That's where you're seeing the big chemical disbursements out in the lakes where they're killing or going after curly leaf pond weed, Eurasian milfoil. That's where those are the species they're targeting there. And then you have the fisheries aquatic plant management. That's the homeowner, cabin owner, who's able to manage weeds in front of their cabin. Some of the things we're starting to see is we're getting more information on the invasive side, what's happening there. And I think from the agency's perspective, that's an important program to control invasives. We're concerned that maybe fisheries habitat isn't being weighed in enough. And so we're starting to explore how important is those milfoil and curly leaf pondweed to fish habitat when that is the dominant weed species in the lake or that area. So we want to understand that a little bit better. But we also want to understand the cabin owner, lakeshore owner, when they're pulling a permit, are they pulling a permit? How much activity is actually going on the lake for weed control that hasn't been permitted? We think there's a lot more of it going on out there in the unpermitted area than the general public understands, okay, or even that the DNR understands.
Hey, one final topic that everyone's been talking about, the four fish walleye bag. The DNR has, mm-hmm, I think, been advocating for that. They haven't, I think, formally proposed it. Tell me if I'm wrong. Where's MinFish fall on that? What do you think of that whole debate?
The DNR has been talking about it. We're being told they are going to bring it forward, but they haven't stepped into the formal process. So until the papers get signed and kind of handed over, we're exploring it. We're evaluating it. We had almost a two-hour meeting with Brad Parsons, fisheries chief.
Sure.
He came into our board meeting, and we threw a lot of questions at him. I'll tell you, the board, in my opinion, is divided. We have people who are very pragmatic and look at it and say, you know, I fish lakes that are four fish limits already. It doesn't really impact. I don't see an impact.
Sure.
But then we have others who are very analytical. They want to see the data. Show me, prove me, and justify why you're doing it. And those, I would tell you, the board's pretty much 50-50 right now on those two fronts, from the pragmatic to the analytical. I see a little movement back and forth with them. I think the agency has to do a little bit more education. We didn't get all of our questions in. Not that they wouldn't have answered them. We just didn't have time to get them all answered. We're taking a dive into this. We're not just taking a pass on it. We're diving in. We're looking at it and asking questions. I think if they move forward with the proposal, the board will probably come out with a a recommendation one way or the other. I just can't tell you which way it'll be.
If I may, Mark, it seems to me that MinFish has had a real healthy relationship with DNR. Not afraid to challenge them, but worked very well. And let's break down the science on whatever the issue might be. You know, Brad comes to your meetings. You folks, interact. You've had your summits, your symposiums. You know, and DNR has participated, but you folks have operated them. Are you going to do one of those again in 2026?
We are planning. We are planning another one to do in the spring of 26. So probably sometime in April, late April, likely. We're talking about going back out. The board would like to possibly go out to the Ottertail County area, Lake Alexandria area. At least those are the preliminary discussions, but we got some work to do. Most definitely, we will have another summit this spring.
Well, we will keep listeners and readers of Outdoor News posted on that as the year unfolds. Well, we will see you at the roundtable this coming Friday, Mark. Thanks for all you do. I'd remind folks, you got a great website. It's mn-fish.com if folks want to see what MinFish is all about and support the organization. So thanks a lot, Mark.
Thanks, Rob.
Mark Holston, Executive Director of MinFish, mn-fish.com for more information. Let's break more of the broadcast after these messages.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the squirrel woods to deer camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
You fish the same waters year after year, but what if your next best fishing story is just a few miles away? Onyx Fish builds on 15 years of experience, giving hunters and adventurers a revolutionary angling tool to help you find new water, new access, and new fish. Find the right lake. Know the species, size, and abundance. Get expert local insight. Navigate to the right ramp fast. Then go fish in new lakes like they're your home waters. Don't chase reports. Make your own with Onyx Fish.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
The Outdoor News Foundation is dedicated to nurturing the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts. Through your generous donations, we provide youth with access to OutdoorNews.com, educational scholarships, and grants. Every dollar donated goes directly to connecting young people with nature and outdoor activities. Help us cast a legacy for the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts and conservation leaders. Visit OutdoorNews.com to get involved, learn more, and donate today.
Ice season is here, and when you pull your favorite fish up through the ice, make sure you finish it right. Chef Robert's Gourmet Breading Mix was created by a chef over 40 years ago who just wanted a better fish fry. Today, it's the same great flavor in a resealable 12-ounce bag, perfect for your kitchen or the hot stove out on the ice. Three flavors, original lemon, pepper, and Cajun. Just wet the fish, coat it, and cook it. That's it. One step from hole to plate. Chef Robert's, when you catch your favorite fish, use your favorite breading. Visit www.chefroberts.com for more information.
Have more success on the ice with the LiveScope Plus Ice Fishing Bundle LI from Garmin. Drill fewer holes, catch more fish. This portable live sonar bundle comes with the LiveScope Plus system, EchoMap UHD 93SV display, and a lithium battery, all packaged in a case making hole hopping a breeze. LiveScope Plus helps you find more fish with improved resolution, reduced noise, clearer images, and better target separation. Fill your freezer with fillets with help from Garmin. Visit Garmin.com or shop your local Garmin dealer today.
Welcome back to Outdoor News Radio on this first weekend of January 2026. The All Canada shows are coming to Wisconsin as well as Chicago, Illinois later this month. My radio colleague Dan Small is going to take lead right now and give listeners all the details.
Thanks for joining us on Outdoors Radio. I'm Dan Small. Many of us travel to Canada to hunt, fish, or pursue other outdoor activities, and there's a great opportunity to learn about outdoor recreation in Canada and actually meet Canadian outfitters, guides, and resort owners. It's called the All Canada Show. The All Canada Show is coming to Brookfield and Green Bay, Wisconsin, and Chicago in just a few weeks. You can learn more at allcanada.com. And joining me now to talk about the All Canada shows is Jim Crowley. He's the host of Jim Crowley Outdoors on TV, and we'll ask him about that show, and Slickfish Radio as well. He's a seminar speaker at the All Canada shows, and he's been with them a long time. Jim, thanks for joining us, and welcome to Outdoors Radio.
Dan, it's a pleasure to be back. I'm really excited about the All Canada shows coming up, and no better way to kick it off than being with you on your show.
You've been with the show, the All Canada shows now, you told me, 17 years?
Yeah, I think it's actually closer to 20, a couple back of previous owners. But for 17 years, I've been speaking there every single year. They're my favorite shows every year. It's almost like coming home to a family week on every show we stop at. My dad started taking me to Canada when I was 8, so literally 50 years of going to Canada and numerous provinces. And I'm excited to talk about it every year. We had some great trips last year, learned some cool new stuff, and I'm looking forward to sharing that with everybody.
Well, you and I have that in common, that we've been going to Canada since we were kids. There's a great appeal to the whole Canadian thing. What is the appeal in your mind?
I honestly think it's family. And when you asked that question, the first memory that popped up was my dad and I at Starkey's Resort, which is no longer there, on Lake of the Woods. That's where I caught my first smallmouth bass.
Huh.
That became my favorite fish. Still is, no matter all the freshwater, saltwater places I've been blessed to fish, it always comes back to the smallmouth bass. And it comes back to that memory of my mom and my dad taking me to Lake of the Woods for the first time. That, pun intended, hooked me, and I get excited like a kid every time I still go back. And that's what we want to share with people at this show. And I think we've been doing it for a lot of years, and it's been successful. It's that family experience and the adventure. That's what keeps me, and I think a lot of other people, coming back to Canada.
So let's talk about these shows now. How are they formatted? What can people expect when they get there?
The Milwaukee show, for example, it's going to be 3 days. It's January 16th to the 18th. An opening night, I think we go from 3 to 8 that night. That's going to be Daredevil night. So everybody walks in the door, and it's a different Daredevil every year, you know, a different color. So people have had collections over the years. If you get tickets online right now, they're $12 at the show. They're $14. And you can get a weekend pass, which a lot of people do because they want to come back more than once. You can get a weekend pass for $20. I think this year children 17 and under are free.
Yes.
But on Sunday, it's free to all veterans. So the All Canada Show already is inviting to family, to our veterans. And then when you get there, you're going to have lodges and outfitters. You're going to have the people that you're going to be spending your time with, that you're going to be going on your adventure, your family trip with. You're going to be able to talk with them right now. The All Canada Show has never been the show for gutter salesmen and Ginsu knives and luggage. Never been that. It's always been about lodges and outfitters and outfitting the public with all the information they need to plan their trip.
Let's talk about some of the exhibitors. Who are people going to meet at these shows?
You're going to meet lodges that have fishing and hunting. You're going to meet some that are just fishing. Green Bay, for example, you probably have the most hunting lodges there because there's a lot of population at that show that really likes bear hunting. So we've got seminars that are going to cover everything from fishing and hunting. And as soon as you walk in the door, you're going to have the opportunity to see lodges right there. And at some of the shows, I think Chicago, we may have over 100 different lodges and outfitters. And Green Bay and Milwaukee, it's probably somewhere between 60 and 80. I haven't seen the total count yet, but it's a lot. You're going to have more than a full day there. You're also going to have the opportunity for a shore lunch. You're going to feel like you're in Canada when you walk in the door, because that's what you're going to be dealing with. You're going to be dealing with and experiencing everything before you get to go on that trip. And you're going to find out everything when you're at our show.
And seminars, you mentioned bear hunting. My friend Dan Trawicki is doing a seminar on Canadian bear hunting. You're doing several on smallmouths, of course, your favorite fish, and other species as well. Tell us about your seminars.
I'm actually doing 4 completely separate seminars. Milwaukee, I'll be doing three. And the first one is going to be smallmouth bass on big baits. That's going to be on Friday. On Saturday, I'm going to be doing in-depth finesse tactics for smallmouth bass. And then a really fun one to do, I'm going to be doing on Sunday, called spoon feeding northern pike. And then one of the other seminars that I'm doing is Canadian Essentials for Multi-Species Success. When I do that one at a couple of the other shows, I'm going to be showing people some of your high percentage lures to pack in your tackle box. I call them the American Express card of lures, the ones you just don't leave home without.
Okay.
When you're going to Canada. And I want to give them high percentage baits in that seminar. When we're talking about smallmouth bass on big baits, I'm going to be going over some surprising baits that work well everywhere, but especially in Canada, they're going to be probably bigger than most people would think for smallmouth bass, but they have a really high percentage of putting big fish in the boat, and they're easy to throw. The one where in-depth finesse tactics, we're going to be covering everything from 1/16 ounce hair jigs, maybe do some drop shotting, some Ned rigging. There's a whole bunch of stuff that I'm going to get really in-depth and fun with the crowd. And spoon feeding northern pike, I've caught a lot of master angler northern pikes when it comes to Manitoba and also traveling through Ontario and Saskatchewan. And I'm going to give you three or four of my favorite spoons, exactly what they do in the water and how you can tailor them to how the fish are reacting to your baits. It's a fun seminar for big pike.
What is You Book It, We Buy It all about?
Well, that's a pretty cool thing that the All Canada Show has. So if you book a trip at the All Canada Show, and it has to be there, then you qualify to be put in a contest where if they draw your name, the All Canada Show can pay for your trip.
Wow.
I remember being there one year, if it wasn't last year, the year before, when somebody's name got drawn. Oh, my goodness. Well, they were hooting and hollering. It was the last day of the show, but they were having a blast. Who would have thought? We booked our trip, and it got paid for. Now, there's rules and specifics that go with that, but how cool is that? You have the opportunity, just by booking a trip there, that you could get your trip paid for.
Yeah, no kidding. On the website, it says if you're already booked for 2025, you qualify to win by visiting your lodge at the show. So some people have already booked, and hey, they can win if they visit the lodge. They'll be in the drawing. Well, Jim, we got to let you go. I look forward to seeing you in person in Milwaukee or in Brookfield, because it's at the Brookfield Convention Center, the first show. And yep. We will talk there. Folks, that was Jim Crowley. JimCrowleyOutdoors.com is where you can learn all about his TV and radio and podcast shows. And the All Canada Show, information on all three of them is at allcanada.com. Milwaukee is January 16th through the 18th, Green Bay 22nd through the 25th, and Chicago the 29th of January through February 1st. Check it out, allcanada.com.
Thank you, Dan Small, for all the great information on the All Canada shows coming to the Upper Midwest later this month. Right now, we're going to grab a break for Outdoor News Radio. We'll be back with Tim Lesmeister. Don't go away. More of the show after these messages.
By the numbers, here are the costs of not having Onyx Fish. 400 extra holes drilled, 100 wasted ice miles, 20 needless gallons of truck, snowmobile, or ATV gas, 5 trips trying to catch a walleye where they don't live, 3 days of vacation you'll never get back, 2 wrong turns that cost you an extra hour at prime time, and 1 last time you'll waste dollars and effort. Onyx Fish, $34.99 per year, 10 Midwest states, countless ways to catch more fish.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands so future generations can enjoy what we enjoy. Join the group that makes a difference. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
Are you ready to hit the frozen waters and reel in some epic catches? The all-new OutdoorNews.com is your ultimate resource for all things ice fishing. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, OutdoorNews.com is the source for the latest tips, techniques, and gear reviews. stay ahead of the rest with the most up-to-date ice conditions, fishing reports, and hotspots to maximize your success. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to elevate your hard water game. Visit OutdoorNews.com today and become part of the ice angling revolution.
Hey, Steve Panaz here. For too long, Minnesota anglers have not had a strong voice at the legislature or the DNR. You can help ensure the quality of state fisheries by joining the MinFish Sport Fishing Foundation. Individual memberships are free and life memberships are available. MinFish Foundation is dedicated to restoring, protecting, and enhancing Minnesota sport fishing opportunities. To join us, visit min-fish.com.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the squirrel woods to deer camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
As farmers and ranchers, stewardship of the land comes naturally. You help keep water clean, improve the soil, and provide habitat for wildlife. But did you know conservation can also improve your bottom line? Learn more at conservationpays.org.
Everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. Rob's Riesland with you for another segment. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Happy New Year to all of our listeners. I hope you like the broadcast. If so, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or call us at 800-535-5191 if you would like to subscribe. Hey, my buddy Tim Lesmeister is with us here. Happy New Year to you, Timmy.
Oh, it's going to be a good one. I figure 2026 is when I catch all the biggest fish. Get limits on all of the stuff I point my gun at and just have a great year.
I like the attitude. That is a good personal outlook. Hey, you know what? Periodically when things are kind of quiet and this is a quiet time of year, Tim and I like to circle back and talk about music a little bit, devote a segment to musicians and some of our favorite music over our increasingly long lives. It's a pretty quiet time of year. Let's face it, it's the first of the year. And some of the Mount Rushmores that Tim and I have done over the past couple of years have been like best ever female vocalists, the best, biggest, greatest rock and rollers. A year ago, we did songwriters. This past midsummer, we did guitarists. And we do not prep in advance. We always kind of want to surprise each other. And it's always interesting how many we sync up on, Tim. I think we usually sync up on about 50%. I think we have kind of a tough theme this time around. We're going with the Mount Rushmore of best ever male rock and roll vocalists. And we're talking kind of pure vocalists here. We're not necessarily talking front men, right, Tim? You're on board with that?
Yeah, I'm looking at voices here, that's for sure.
Because if it was front men, I'll be very clear. I think it would be Mick Jagger would be number one.
Yeah, probably. There's very little doubt about that. He's not even on my list for today.
Exactly. And that's my point. God bless Mick Jagger. He's the prototype for rock and roll frontman. But let's face it, not one of the greatest vocalists ever to sing in the genre.
Right.
So this was probably the toughest one for me, Tim.
Oh, yeah, it was tough.
There's a lot of really good ones. And so why don't we just kind of jump in? And I'll go first. You want to know who occupies my George Washington slot?
Yeah.
I'll be shocked if he's not on your list. Freddie Mercury from Queen. Freddie, to me, would have been a fantastic vocalist, would have been one of the best vocalists in any genre. He happened to pick rock and roll, and he sang rock and roll exceedingly well. Did Freddie make your top four?
He was my number one.
Yeah, okay. I'm not
no doubt about it. Freddie Mercury had a 4-octave vocal range. The guy could go anywhere with his voice, but here's the thing. It was clean. It was pure. And he maintained that through his concerts. Unfortunately, I never got to see this individual live. I wished I would have. But I've seen enough videos and I've watched enough of him to know that his voice never lost even one single bit of range or pitch the entire time that he was singing. The guy was incredible, one of a kind, the best that ever was.
Tim, you described it much better than I could have, and I think the rest are going to be a lot harder. But
yeah,
Freddie really stands out. There's just no two ways of looking at it. He was remarkable, and again, died before his time, sadly. Why don't you go next? Who's your next, Tim? Your number two.
My number two guy is Robert Plant, okay. Led Zeppelin, and the reason for that is because, you know, Robert Plant is still performing today, not as a rock god, but his vocals are still very adequate. He's got real good pitch control. And back when he was singing with Led Zeppelin, there was no range that he couldn't tap into. There was no area of the vocal spectrum that this guy couldn't touch. Some of the songs that he could lay back on going to California, but then Whole Lot of Love, he'd just go completely in directions that were obscene. So he's my number two guy. I'd put him right there next to Washington.
Okay, Plant was in my top four begrudgingly. Mostly because I really don't like Led Zeppelin all that much. I really don't like Jimmy Page that much. But there's just no two ways about it. And I think you articulated it very well. The longevity thing is key here. The guy is still around. He's still making music. He's had some great songs as a solo artist. And you listen to his vocals in Zeppelin in the late 60s and early 70s, and they're just absolutely incredible. I'll tell you who he bumped off maybe when we're done within my top four, because it was really close. And I think the longevity thing was the reason that I agree with you. So it's again, we don't do this in advance, but we're two for two. We're at 50% as usual, Tim.
And you know, you're right. As we get down here farther, I had really, really, really tough time when I got down to number four. Oh my gosh, that was nearly impossible to pick.
Let me jump into my number three. I don't think you'll disagree with it, but I'll be surprised if he's in your top four. Steve Perry from Journey, absolutely remarkable vocal range. Everybody in the music business just shakes their head at what an incredible vocalist this guy is. He's still alive. Maybe the tragedy of Steve Perry is he doesn't perform anymore. He doesn't seem to be recording music anymore. But I just can't ignore how phenomenal a vocalist Steve Perry was. I didn't necessarily like Journey a lot, but every time I hear him sing, it's just like, wow, that guy is in a league of his own.
Journey was a great band. I've seen him in concert a couple of times, never with Steve Perry. And that's the reason that Perry didn't make my list. I could have made him number six. The guy had an incredible voice. The problem is with Steve Perry is he didn't hang in there and stay right with the band forever.
That's fair.
Perry, although he had a voice that was second to none, he just didn't carry it long enough for me.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Hey, you're listening to Outdoor News Radio. Yeah, I know. Les Meister and I, Rob Driesen, we're talking music. We do this a couple times a year. Tim and I are both, Tim's a professional musician. I'm kind of amateur. We like a couple times a year talking about music. We're talking about the greatest rock and roll vocalist ever. We've knocked out three on my side, two on Tim's. Who's your number three, Tim?
My number three is Axl Rose from Guns N' Roses. And the reason for Axl Rose is the first time I heard Welcome to the Jungle, I'm like, who is this guy?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, this guy's got at least a five-octave vocal range, incredible range. He shows it on many of the songs that Guns N' Roses did. He has a hard time hitting those notes now, but he's still performing. One of the most arrogant singers in the business. There's very little doubt about that. Yeah. But, you know, Sweet Child of Mine, oh my gosh. The vocal performance on that song to me is just incredible. And I just can't believe that anybody that's got a voice that phenomenal doesn't make the list. So
I have no problem with the pick, Tim. He's certainly in my top 10. You're talking to a Gen Xer who bought Appetite for Destruction in autumn of 1987. I mean, no one had even heard it. You know what? Aerosmith was playing at the Dane County Coliseum in Madison, Wisconsin. Me and three other buddies got in a junk car and drove down there. And one of my buddies said, I just got this new cassette from this band. None of us had heard of it. And we listened to it all the way down and all the way back. I'll never forget that. So, I mean, you're talking to a huge Axl Rose fan. Like Perry a little bit, Tim. I mean, there's a 20-year stretch there. We didn't do much.
That's true.
He is touring again. Yeah. Great singer-songwriter also. I mean, a lyricist. So I got no problem with that pick. But
hey, you mentioned Aerosmith. Where'd you put Steven Tyler on this
list? Tyler, yeah, another probably top 10-er, pretty easy. definitely on my longer list, which when we get done with our top four, we should talk about our longer list.
Sure.
Number four, man, was really hard for me too.
That was a tough one, boy.
I mean, the one problem is so many of these guys flamed out. And, you know, Cobain is right there. I mean, you want to talk about a rock and roll growl with a lot of songs that still hold up. Cobain is right there. But for number four for me, I had to go with, I mean, in my opinion, the original rock and roll growl, Bon Scott from AC/DC. It's a long way to the top. If you want to rock and roll, it's one of the greatest rock and roll songs ever written. Again, he flamed out, but I just think Bon Scott, AC/DC, man, it's... No one ever growled rock and roll the way Bon Scott did.
Yeah, he was number eight on my list.
Okay, good.
He was number eight. All right. And I agree. I thought that there was some incredible stuff that came out of AC/DC. And boy, I'll tell you what, I couldn't agree with you more as far as the probably number one growler.
Yeah.
But the number one screamer made my number four, and that was Roger Daltrey from The Who.
Okay, yeah. I figured he'd be in there, and solid pick, Tim.
Song. Yeah, well, because if you listen to Behind Blue Eyes, I mean, it's a real nice, mellow song. He's able to cover that well, but then you get into Won't Get Fooled Again, and of course, everybody has heard that scream a million times.
You bet.
But the one that really kills me that Roger Daltrey did was Love Rain on Me. But every song that this guy did, from Pinball Wizard to, like I said, Won't Get Fooled Again, he... You know, gave it 1,000,000%. This guy never sat back and just kind of rolled through like some of these guys might. And I always was always impressed whenever I saw Daltrey that just how much he put into his shows, how much he put into, you know, pushing his vocals to the limit. I'm surprised he was able to tour and just go, you know, like right. literally mm-hmm. for weeks and be able to put out that kind of output.
Oh, yeah, without question. Top 10 for me, like I think I've told you before, I'm not a big Who guy, so I kind of held that against him a little bit, but I have no problem with him being in your top four. I think all four of those are really good. So let's just go. We both had Freddie. We both had Bob Plant. I had Steve Perry, and I had Bon Scott. You had, in addition to Freddie and Bob Plant, you had Roger Daltrey and...
Axl Rose,
yeah. Some really solid picks there. You know, some of my other favorite vocalists, Tim, like I say, Cobain is right there, top yes. five or six. You got some really great crooners who happen to sing rock and roll, and Bono, a.k.a. Paula Hewson, as well as Michael Stipe, probably my favorite American band, R.E.M., two great vocalists. Again, kind of more crooners who happen to sing rock and roll. But other names, Roy Orbison, Rob Halford from Judas Priest. I mean, that guy's old and he's still singing really well. Steven Tyler, Chris Cornell.
Oh, Chris Cornell was my number five.
Oh, was he really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Chris Cornell was my number five. The guy was incredible.
Yeah.
He could have almost beat out Axl Rose. I was really having a hard time between those two. But then I went and listened to all these guys over and over again for about 3 days. I'm driving down the road and Ray's going like, wow, you don't listen to classic rock very often. This is pretty wild.
That's good.
And I said, yeah, no kidding. I haven't heard these guys in years. But boy, I forgot just the power here.
Yeah.
And Chris Cornell, oh my gosh.
Yeah, he was a hell of a vocalist.
Phenomenal.
Sammy Hagar, another guy I really like a lot, who's still out there singing pretty well, but not in my top four anyway, but that was fun, Tim. Thank you for doing that with me again. And we'll maybe a female rock and roller vocalist would be sometime in July. Maybe we'll circle to that topic.
Perfect.
All right. Well, Tim, thanks for joining me. Fun segment with you, and Happy New Year one more time to you and yours.
Happy New Year, everybody, and we'll catch up to you soon.
Tim Lesmeister, I appreciate him joining us, as well as all of our other listeners. Everybody, have a great week out of doors. Happy New Year. Rob Dreisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio. Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.